new episode of the Light Podcast. As always, I'm joined by my brother Big John L. John, what's good? Tell me what's good, John.
What's going on, Scott? How you doing today, man? You know I'm amped. So let me not say too much right now. And let's just get into the F because we got our guy right here, Nature Boy, Maryland, Howard County, B. Moore's finest. The up and coming, I can't even say up and coming because the man's been on the scene since 2016. And I'm so excited to get into this one, man.
It's funny because I was thinking about this very thing when we was coming up into the studio. And, you know, me and Nature were already talking. He come in yelling at us, talking about keep that for the episode. So I gotta temper my excitement because there's a lot of things that I want to get into. But first and foremost, let's introduce our guest. Nature Boy, how you doing?
What's good, man? How y'all feeling?
Hey, excited. Super excited. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about where the name Nature Boy came from.
So I used to go by Tay. Mm-hmm. I was in a group called Tay Anisis, and I went by Tay. So it came from a couple places. Of course, there's the Ric Flair influence. One night I was just watching a doc on Ric Flair, and I'm like, you know what? I really relate to this guy. You know what I'm saying? And I used to go by, so my production name was Naste Trax. Mm-hmm. And the Trax was a triple X.
Nice.
So that didn't really do well, I learned, for like certain things. Like if you send somebody a cold email and you got a triple X at the end of your name, yeah, they probably not going to open it. Because they like, oh, this some porn or something. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like I was just kind of going through a name change situation in like 2012. And my manager at the time was like, you know what, I like Nature Boy for you. You lived in Howard County before in the county. You know what I'm saying? I always got the trees at the time. You know what I'm saying? Whatever. So they're like, we're going to go with Nature Boy. And then once my mother stamped it, she was like, I like that. I'm going to call you Nature. So then she started calling me Nature, and it's just stuck. You know, mm-hmm. It's one of the things that, like, it was, like, intentional, but it naturally stuck. Just everybody kind of took to it. So.
Right.
Yeah, so I've been Nature since like 2011, 2012.
I did. Gotcha. I like it, man. It definitely fits. You know, John put me on your music, and I couldn't be more happy that he did that.
Man, that's love, man.
Yeah, I went backwards. I started with Godfather.
Okay.
You know, yeah. And I'm stuck there.
Yeah.
And I want to get into that for very specific reasons, you know, over the course of the natural flow of our conversation. But, mm-hmm. you know, admittedly, I'm a hip-hop snob.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Old head, reformed old head.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
I had to make some changes because, you know, my nephews, my cousins, in order for me to relate to them, I had to, you know, kind of meet them, you know, where they're at. You
Absolutely.
Know what I mean? Stop being that angry old head. You
yeah,
know what
nah,
I mean?
I feel you. I was a purist for a minute, like, yeah, even yeah. as a youngin', you
right.
know what I'm saying? Back in 2007, like, I was just like, I was living in Florida at the time, and mm-hmm. I was just like, nah, this, but me moving helped me because mm-hmm. I kind of got to see the new sound get ushered in mm-hmm. and kind of respect it at its roots a little bit. So, like, that's how I'm able to, like, my base is hip-hop, abstract, boom-bap, hip-hop, but
808.
I got into the 808s and all that once I moved to Florida and, like, Rick Ross, every day I'm hustling and all of that was kind of getting into the scene. So, I thank God for that because I would probably still be like, nah. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not changing. You can't change me.
Right.
So I feel you, though.
That's me. You don't sound like Guru, Q-Tip. I'm not listening to you.
I ain't mad, man. Right. I ain't mad at all.
So let me ask you a quick question. What do you think about Anchor Media Studios here?
I think it's dope, man. It just feel clean. Like,
right.
When you do hip-hop, you walk into a lot of studios. And like, you know, it's gritty a little bit.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But this feel corporate. This feel zen, you know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I just
yeah.
I like that off top, you know what I'm
gotcha.
saying, just to be it feel professional,
right?
So I like this space a lot,
right off
saying?
The Laurel Lakes, right
yeah,
here in Laurel,
yeah,
Maryland.
You know what I'm saying? Wait for y'all, we saw a lake, we like we about to go hit the lake until we figure out where to go, you know what I'm saying? So he's
nice.
Just by the lake cooling, man. I love you know, no puns, I love being in nature and just
gotcha.
You know, just getting out of the noise for a minute. So it's
gotcha.
Cool, yeah.
gotcha. So you mentioned, you know, you being in Florida and that whole thing, what was your jumping in point for hip hop? Like, when did you go 2 feet in a pool on hip hop?
So, I was talking to somebody out there. So, like, I'm kind of like raised in it, like from my mother and my father on out. My father's a DJ, and my mother's just fashion, hip hop, grew up in the 80s, just all culture. She always had the dopest hip hop music around and R&B. So like I grew up in it. I started DJing like 7, 8 years old, on vinyl and stuff like that, using my dad's equipment. I was making mixtapes that young, selling them at school, in elementary school.
Jeez.
So like, yeah, and then and then around like middle school, I got like a karaoke machine and started playing with like tech and sound, trying to get it to like record and stuff. And then in ninth grade, I got FL Studios now, but it was called Fruity Loops. So I got that, and that kind of got me open with production. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, from there, I started recording myself on Cubase and all of that. So like, I literally just went through the motions from DJing to production to recording myself. Now I'm doing, you know, throwing shows, doing shows, like curating and stuff. So like, I just love it from, I want to say as much, long as I can, I must have loved it from birth, because like, remember my life without hip hop. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just naturally in it, man. I got to shout out my parents for like kicking that off and supporting that and getting me equipment I asked for and programs I asked for. And I was in band the whole time too, because I love playing instruments. So I could play a couple different instruments, stuff like that. I just love music. You know what I'm saying?
I could tell.
Yeah.
I could tell, man, because, you know, I'm, you know, production's my passion, right? And so there's a lot of albums that, you know, admittedly I overlook. You know what I mean? Because I hear things that just don't click with me. You know what I mean? I didn't have that problem with Godfather.
Yeah.
You know, so you said a magic word for me.
Yeah.
And you said something about abstract as far as your production style.
Yeah.
What I want you to do, if you don't mind, is just expand on that. Like, what you mean by that? Who your influence is from a production standpoint? I think I know the answer already. But
yeah. Like, I love, like, you know, I love, you mentioned Guru. I love DJ Premier. I love, man, of course, I love Kanye. I love Dr. Dre. Man, I love Alchemist, Derringer. Man, I could go into it real deep, but you know, I love like Havoc, you know what I'm saying?
I heard some Dilla.
Yeah, of course I love Dilla. Like, you know, I feel like everybody go to Dilla first. You know what I'm saying? I was trying to get into some muffles, but like, yeah, Dilla is definitely one of them. You know, RZA.
Man, definitely heavyweights.
Yeah, like I love them. You know what I'm saying? Like I love them all. Like I love Quincy Jones. You know what I'm saying? Like
I love. Come on.
I love Smokey. I love all of them. Like, you know what I'm saying? From like a. Michael Jackson was a producer, didn't know how to play an instrument, but just knew what he wanted, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I love all production styles, you know what I'm saying? Just Blaze, I can't forget Just Blaze.
That's, of course not. Yeah.
You know, but those are my favorites. But I like the Metro Boomins and the Mike Wills and all of that, too, you know what I'm saying? But those people I named are, like, my foundation, you know what I'm saying?
Gotcha. I could tell, man, when going through and really listening to Godfather, I could hear the influences of the producers that you just mentioned.
Specifically,
Madlib. You know, like the soulful loops.
Yeah, Madlib. You know, love Madlib.
Alchemist, you got some tracks on there with no drums.
Yeah.
You know, just loops.
Most of the album is no drums. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just because, like, I was really with this album, like, if I had a band, that's how I was thinking. Like, I don't have a band. I'm going to make a band sound around me. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I think the only song on there that had drums is, I think, maybe, like, two songs out of 13 had drums. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I really listen to as well. I mean, your choice for drums was subtle, right, but tasteful, right? Not overdone. You know what I mean? Those are the kind of things I listen for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, even one track. It was just hats, you know, which is on purpose, I could tell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I thought it was well done from a production standpoint. And you produced that album.
Yeah, I produced everything. Yeah. I think out of like 5, 6 albums, I've only not produced like maybe 3 or 4.
Gotcha.
So I produce everything. I usually record everything. I might take it to another engineer to get another ear on it as far as like mixing and mastering to finish it.
Right.
Just so like, because I've been listening to them so long from the start to finish, I might get another ear on them. But like, other than that, I touch the music from nothing to the end. You know what I'm saying?
Well done. Seriously, well done, man. And again, going back to my hip hop snob days, right? Listening to Godfather, I feel like I know you, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned your parents.
Yeah, right.
And what's interesting to me on this album, it's obvious your parents were a huge influence on you.
Yeah.
Right? From a lyric, you know, you touched on, like, from a subject matter standpoint.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's what I was going to talk about, yeah.
Yeah, in every track, right? Your mom, you know.
Yeah, my mother.
That red Corvette track.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. I got the shirt on, my man.
Yeah, I see that.
Got the red Corvette on the joint, you know what I'm saying? Got my mom's name on the back, Angela.
Yeah. I see your drip.
You know what I'm saying? So, definitely a huge influence, just, like, as a kid, as an adult, having to, like, you know, her kind of help me and accept me for what I wanted to do, and how she, you know, helped me as a man, having to take care of her through breast cancer, and even from now beyond the grave. So, like, she's been an influence and continues to be an influence, and so is my dad. My dad gave me the tools, you know. My dad sat with me and showed me how to hook up techniques and stuff like that as a young, and I cherish that now as we move into this technology era where you can kind of press a button, then hit the streets, and now you're a DJ.
Right.
Like, I had to learn with vinyl, had to learn to, you know, blend, stuff like that, and I just appreciate that. I want to listen to Biggie, Ready to Die. He like, you about this Sunday, we listen to Sam Cooke and James Brown and all of that. So, like, the samples that you hear me use, I listen to that music. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's, I'll listen to that and hip hop for the most part. If I'm in the gym or something like that, or I'm, you know, I DJ, we out partying or something, I'll play that other stuff, the newer stuff, the more hyper stuff. But, like, naturally, I just want to hear 70 soul, 60 soul music. Mm-hmm. When I get up in the morning, first thing I play is, like, the Isley Brothers. Nice. You know what I'm saying? That's what I want to hear first.
I can tell.
Yeah.
I can tell.
So let me ask you this. So, as you know, Scott's a producer. Mm-hmm. And me, this is why this thing works that we do, this thing of ours. I like the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't get me wrong. I love the production.
Yeah.
But I leave that, you know what I mean?
You want to know what's being said. Yeah, I want to know what's being said.
Exactly. Yeah. What are you saying? And the rules in hip-hop are, you got to let them know where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
You got to let them know who you are. Mm-hmm. You got to let them know what you're about.
Yeah.
All right? So from your very first album to your last, I've seen such a huge maturity from you, not only from the production side, but more so, from my opinion, from your lyrical content.
Absolutely.
So explain to me, like, are you a writer and then you get in the booth, or do you freestyle and then you write that down and get in the booth? Like, how do you put all that together? How do you make that come alive?
So it's different. Depending on, you know, just my vibes. Like, I make music when I feel like it. You know what I'm saying? I'm not of much, like, I don't manufacture music. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't be like, hey, I'm going in the booth to make a club song or a song about a lady. Or that. Like, I don't have those thoughts before I get in the booth. So, like, sometimes I write, I like to write on the plane. I like to write on long rides because that's the only time I can have, like, long-term thinking. Like, a lot of life makes me like, oh, I got to do this later and do that later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I can't really have that long point to just create.
Just sit and be, right? Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, you know, I write like that, and I also make beats like that. So, like, I make beats. Like, I might not make beats for, like, a month or two, but then I'll sit down and, like, because I had a shortened, you know, work week or something like that, and I'll bust out, like, 30. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I really sit down and create when my mind tells me to, or when it pours out. So, writing-wise, from the beginning, and I was telling him this when we were just talking, I was like, you know, as a producer, artist, sometimes I sit in a place where, like, I want to make stuff for me, but I also want to make stuff that other people are going to like. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I reach for that sometimes.
I got you.
And that's what you could probably hear in the beginning to now. Because in the beginning, I made my first solo album, because I was in groups before 2016.
Gotcha.
I was in a 10-piece band, and I was in a hip-hop duo, where I was the producer, rapper, you know what I'm saying? But as a solo artist, I made my first album when my mother passed. So I was going through grieving, and I was partying, because, like, there was, like, a duality to what was going on, like, when she passed, it was sad, of course, and messed up, because I was really close with her. but I was also free, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't have to take care of her anymore.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
I feel that.
So, like, there was two sides the whole time where mm-hmm. I was sad, but I was also, like, free to party and free to travel and free to just move and not have these responsibilities. So all of that is in Supernatural, my first album, mm-hmm. where you can hear me, like, angry. You can hear me, like, you can, you know, I got this song called Jada and Styles on there. Like,
yes, you do.
Like, man, I'm still going to show you I can spit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, it's there.
That's a dope track, too. That's I definitely had that on
there. I had some, like, R&B type joints on there.
Yeah.
I had some sad, hopeful song. Like, I had everything because I was going through everything.
It was very eclectic.
Exactly. So I was going through all of that stuff, and I was, you know, I was abusing substances and all of that.
Right,
you know
right,
what I'm
right.
saying? I was really trying to figure out this pain, you know what I'm saying?
I got so, you. Like, were coping.
I was coping. So, like, it all went into that album. And then, you know, my second album, I kind of, I cut everything cold turkey, but then I relapsed. So, like, the second album was just all fun and, like, uppers and Molly and shrooms and all of that. Like, was my second album. And then my son was about to be born. So, then that's Father's Day. So, then Father's Day is, like I kind of cooled out a little bit. I stopped doing everything. I was getting ready for this journey that I was, like, welcome. I couldn't wait to be a father. So, that's mm-hmm. why I called it Father's Day. And then I had this period where, you know, pandemic, so Breaking Buzz, stuff like that.
See,
I didn't know what was about to happen, so I'm just in the house smoking weed, and I'm just like, I think we about to die, like, you know what I'm saying? So I'm just smoking weed and watching Breaking Bud. I mean, Breaking Bad.
I want to tell you, Breaking Bud reminds me of Wiz Khalifa, because anytime I hear Wiz, I gotta smoke.
Like
especially like Cushion Orange Juice, you know what I'm saying?
I wanted to make the smokers.
So when I heard Breaking Bud, I was like, by track three, I'm like, pause.
Let me roll up.
Let me get the right headspace.
That was the soundtrack for that, man.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
No, no.
I got you. So I always like to ask artists this question, not to put them on the spot.
Yeah.
But do you write your lyrics and then match it to a beat, or you make the beats with the lyrics in mind? Not to put you on the spot.
I just want to know your process. I don't have no problem telling my process, because, like, you know, you can give everybody the ingredients, but their cake ain't going to end up the same.
My man.
I can tell you exactly what I do. But, like, no, it's like, most of the time, because it's different. Like I said, sometimes I write on the plane, no music. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I write in the car, no music. You know what I'm
and
saying?
And then you match it to a beat, or you make the beat for that, what you wrote.
Well, I'll make a beat, and then I'll be like, oh, this might, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's songs on Godfather I wrote 2-3 years before I recorded it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think the Cold Summer joint, when I said it took me 8 years just to write this, I wrote that 8 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Then recorded it for Godfather. So it was like, you know, sometimes the beat bring that feeling out that them lyrics give me. And then sometimes when I'm sitting there making the beat, I'm freestyling. And I'm already, by the time the beat is sequenced and made, I'm ready to go in the booth, and I never wrote anything.
I like that.
You know
what
I'm saying? So I have a couple different ways that I
like that.
You know.
Yeah, Scott and I was listening to 1982 on the way to the studio today. And I'm going to tell you, man, like,
Is that the beat tape?
Yeah.
Yo, I'm gonna be real with you. That's not my tape. It just ended up on my account.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
And I was looking at it, and I'm like, okay, because I literally got food on my phone right now, right? And you know, I follow everything on.
Yeah, I've been trying to get it off my streaming account.
Yeah,
but it matched my style, like, so everybody like, yo, I love that.
I'm looking at the credits and stuff,
that's
and I'm like,
algorithm, man.
Yeah, it was.
I'm
just
like, wait a minute,
that's not even my. That's,
I'm like, I'm about to ask you who Dante K. Parks is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, shout out to Dante K. Parks.
Yeah, he's fine. You know, it's crazy. My middle name is Dante.
Oh, wow. Man, so that's crazy.
I don't know, man. Maybe it's like, you know, maybe
he just
it's
attached like, himself to you.
It's like the Temptations thing, man. It's like two or three of them, you know what I'm saying? Like two or three different groups. Like, yeah. I don't know. But like, yeah, that's, you know. But shout out to that guy because he been giving me a lot of love on
Dante, holler at the Light Podcast. Yeah, whatever you want, man.
Yeah.
And look, I get straight with nature. That's what I mean.
Look, the stream's coming to my account. So, you know, hey. Yeah, I ain't, you know, he got to figure it out.
Say, yeah, actually, it made me think of something. I got a very controversial question, you know, that I want to get your perspective on, man. Okay. This whole AI revolution thing that's happening. What do you feel about that, man? I mean, I've seen a lot of, I mean, who was it? I forgot who it was, man, but produced the album, produced a song, and threw Biggie's voice on it.
Yeah, they did Timberland. Like New York. Yeah, and they did like New York State of Mind with Biggie's voice and stuff like that. What do you think about that? There's a part of me that I'm like, that's scary. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, that's, you know, cause we so true to the craft. Right. So stuff like that ain't going to sit well with us naturally. For people who don't care as much as we do, they're going to have fun with that. They're going to like probably be, a demographic that will make money off of That's not about to do nothing over here.
Right.
If anything, like I said, it's for fun, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, yo, I do want to hear Biggie do a Big L joint.
But I don't.
No, I'm saying, like, for somebody that want to have fun. Yeah, I got you. Know what I'm saying? I don't.
Yeah, I don't want to hear
I don't want to hear none of that.
I don't want to hear Prince over some Michael Jackson.
No.
I don't want to hear that.
But the scary part about it is the people that don't have that foundation like we do, that it doesn't matter to, you know. And sometimes I feel like as time go on, they outnumber the people that are true to the foundation.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's like how I kind of look at it is like, you know, when hip-hop came out, because all of hip-hop is sampling the 70s and, you know, stuff like that, I'm pretty sure they had those feelings that we have about AI. It's not the same thing, but, like, it definitely was like, they were not welcoming to us chopping up a song that a band played out, sat in the studio for hours of doing. We just come chop it up and throw a beat, break beat, take all the James Brown drummers, break beats, put like I know for a fact that there had to be a transition to where like, yo, we not rocking with that. But the hip hop community outnumbered eventually as time went on, and it's like, well, this what we doing. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of look at it like that. I think I always try to have empathy somewhere. Even like that's not me at all. I don't rock with that. I don't rock with AI doing that. But I always try to see the duality of a situation where I'm like, all right, this is my take, and this is probably a take of somebody that's just not like me at all. And I just look at them both, and I'm like, you know, it is what it is. Evolution, life is going to be what it is, and I'm not gonna hold myself a slave to something that like I can't control.
Right.
So if it's happening how it's happening now, it's probably been happening. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of people that came out with albums after they passed, where it's like, you know, did they really record that much, or did they just get their writers together and AI it up? That's and it's point. Like, so now, you know, it makes you question a lot of things, and you know, it is what it is. But no, I don't like it.
I feel like as an artist, as a real artist, which you are, I feel like your take probably is in line with others like you in the industry. You know what I mean? I really got to believe
majority
that.
Of people.
Yeah,
it's like DJing, man. Like I don't like that everybody can just go press play and sync up the look at the number of BPMs and just move it up. Like when I come from, like, yo, you had to have an ear to blend. You had to know that.
That crossfading wasn't easy. That.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like you had to know how to blend and like keep the, you know, play with the tempo. You had to know that and feel that. And I'm just, all I could really do is just thank God that I have that. And, you know, I had that experience. They'll never know what it's like to have to make your own mix tapes from listening to the radio and pressing record and all of that. You know what I'm saying?
Like, tell you right now,
that's stuff that may or may not ever come back.
You know, I'm tell you right now, I had the best pause mix ever.
Yo, your title was crazy, right?
I'm gonna tell you right now, I was hustling cassette tapes back in high school, and I was the pause mix king.
Yeah.
To the point where I used to manufacture an echo chamber by putting two speakers and facing them to one another.
Oh, you was killing it.
And, oh, man. Listen. And put my double cassette recorder right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Hit that record and have music playing through both of those, man. Mm-hmm. And echo chambered it out. I was the pause mixer. Man. King. I'm trying to tell you.
Ain't no pain like you recording music off the radio. Right?
Tell me about it.
And you hit pause to get past a commercial.
Right.
And then you forget to unpause it.
Right.
And oh, you miss a track, you know?
The first time I heard 5 minutes of funk, that happened to me. I'm sitting in my room, right? And back in Pittsburgh, PA. Well, let me let you know, I slapped hip hop on the ass when it was born.
Okay.
Okay. Go back with it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sitting in my room. And Sunday nights, WHAMO, 106 FM back in Pittsburgh, only black radio station. Mm-hmm. The DJ's name was Sly Jock.
Mm.
And you're in the mix with Sly Jock, FM 106. I still know that. I will know that if I have Alzheimer's mixed with dementia and brain cancer. And I'm on my deathbed. And I'll still know that joint. And I'm sitting there. And he's talking about this new cut that just came out, and I'm waiting. You know what I'm saying? I'm waiting like I'm about to jump into the double dutch, right? I'm waiting. Comes on, and I'm like, I'm dancing in my room. I'm like, yeah. Goes off.
Never press record.
Never took the pause off. I had to record that. Didn't hit the pause button. Man, I was so hot. Because, again, with it being the only black radio station, he only came on once a week. Mm-hmm. He came on Sunday. So I had to literally wait.
You used to have to catch your songs in the mix. Until the album came out. You know, I was young, so I couldn't just go buy every album I wanted to hear. You had to get that off the radio in the middle of the DJ mixing it. So, like, I remember that's the first time I heard Lucchini, Can't Blow.
See?
And that was, like, just certain songs you remember hearing for the first time on the radio, and it blows your mind. Like, you was just like, oh, my God. Like,
yeah,
I remember how like, the radio was just the whole Tribe Called Quest.
See, now you're hitting in his vein
Was on the radio, just every song from that album. Just the Marauders joint. Like, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You mentioned Camp Low. I mean, I don't think Ski Beats gets enough credit. You know, he's the one that brought them.
Yeah.
You know?
That's one of the most amazing beats of
of
hip hop, period. No, like, that's a top 10 hip hop beat of all time. Like,
it's timeless.
It's soon every time you play it, it's like it just came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot of production that just man. I love
No question. I wanna hit back on something that you mentioned. We was talking about the AI stuff. And your position on that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, based on, like I said, listening to The Godfather album, I feel like I know you, right? And so I can tell, like, authenticity is huge for you.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah,
big deal to John, too. He probably won't bring it up.
Yeah.
Not that I don't brought it
up. No, I can't now.
Yeah. But there's a skit, and we were laughing about it. They were playing it.
Right.
There was two guys, and he's like, I can read a book.
Yeah, you gotta read a book. Yeah.
And he was like, oh, book. And the interviewer was like, anybody could do that.
Yeah, like,
what did you just learn?
Yeah, what did you do? Anybody could do that. I feel like I know what you was doing with that skit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you was talking to, you know, other quote-unquote rappers.
Right.
That's playing a role. Yeah. That's playing a character.
Nah, it was like Offset. So the song before it was Young, Gifted, and Black.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, I felt like I displayed that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, it was like what you said. It was like people will just be like, oh, I'm gifted too. I could do things too. And then they do what he did, where they just like, you know. And they kind of entertained it at first. They heard him say what he said. And he's like, yeah, I could read all these pages in 2 seconds. And they was just like, okay, go on. So then he do it. And they like, bruh, you don't got to be gifted to do this. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you did nothing. So, yeah, I like irony. I like to be... You know, that's why I wrote Redman on one of the MCs that I like, because I like when rappers can be funny and be lyrical, you know what I'm saying? So I like being punny, you know what I'm saying, when I rap, all of that, so yeah.
So I always like to give people homework, all right? So I'm going to give you some homework.
Okay.
All right? And I come up with the homework assignment as we're going through the interview, and Scott's nodding his head, no, we ain't finished, but I usually do it at the end.
Right.
But I don't want to forget it. All right. So okay. I'm gonna give you your homework early.
All right.
And it's on tape, so
I can't forget
it. So hold him accountable. Hold him accountable. All right. I want you to listen to Wynton Marsalis's latest CD or latest album, whatever. I'm a crotchety old man. I still talk about cassette tapes and stuff, okay. Right? And it is called The Ever Funky Lowdown. Okay? And you know who Wendell Pierce is? He was the guy that was on The Wire?
Yep.
All right. So, yeah. So, basically, the way Wynton Marsalis, he does a period piece every so often where it's about society. So, The Ever Funky Lowdown is his latest period piece. And Wendell Pierce plays a character in this musical arrangement, and the character's name is Mr. Game.
Okay.
All right. So it basically has a musical track, mm-hmm. and then Mr. Game talks.
Mm-hmm.
Musical track, then Mr. Game talks. I don't want to give it away,
mm-hmm.
but listen to that.
Okay.
All right. Report back. And okay. let me know what you think,
right.
because I'm telling you right now, when I listen to like that skit that Scott brought up,
mm-hmm.
and through your whole discography, I could not, like, I'm an assimilation guy,
mm-hmm.
right, and I'm very visual, okay? So, as I'm listening to your music, that Wynton Marsalis, The Ever Funky Lowdown, just kept looping in my head.
Okay.
This track, that track, this track, and I'm listening to your tracks, and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna piece that on him
because
I want you to listen to it and it's educational,
mm-hmm.
all right. And then go in the booth. Trust me.
Cool.
Trust me. And then go in the booth because either do some production or do some writing.
Because it's going to
be a muse. Because the type of artist you are, you're very thought provoking,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I like. You know, like I said, Scott is all about the production. I'm all about the lyrics.
Yeah.
Right. Your lyrics make me think. And if when music does that, then that has the ability to reach the masses.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not just out there, you know, shake your ass to this, twerk to this.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Your music is making people think. So, you know what? Yeah, I can do this. Oh, okay. Okay. Young, gifted, and black. Okay. There's messaging in the packaging.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And when you can do that to the masses and deliver that to the masses, that's the true, in my opinion, that's the true epitome of an MC.
Because
you got to be able to move the crowd. And you can't move the crowd and you can't get between their ears.
Yeah, that's big to me too. So I run a platform called Open Gym USA.
Mm-hmm.
It started out as an open mic. Sort of like a lyricist lounge thing, like mm-hmm. where artists can come together. Of course, we're going to perform and stuff, but it's like more fellowship for me. But for the longest time, I never performed at it, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? But I was always the host and the MC. And it became such an important thing to me in my artistry because it's like I got to move the crowd and connect to the crowd without playing a song, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? So once I got in the practice of doing that for years, it helped my music. Because it's like, I can almost, you know, it helped my show rather. Because it's like, it's not really, like my music is set up to sound good and get you or whatever. But it's what I say in between the songs that set the song up to be accepted more. It's like mm-hmm. laying the palette out, you know what I'm saying? So like, it's crazy you say that because like I've really been appreciating and like thanking God more for like
Amen.
That moment of like, being able to like have to move the crowd without music, you know what I'm saying? So like, yeah, I appreciate that word, that tidbit you just gave me.
Oh man, I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah,
you know, Scott. Now we've talked about it. I mean, this is, you know, we've probably done 60 episodes of the Light Podcast by mm-hmm. now, right? And we've talked about it pretty much on every episode in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas an artist, to be a real artist, right? They have to be able to say something.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? You can't just like the skit, right?
Yeah,
right. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you know, we went through a period when the mumble rap bullshit was out there,
mm-hmm.
right? We went through a period. I think we did probably three or four episodes, and finally Scott said, "John, we can't bad talk it anymore. We just gotta, and then at the same time, all that drill music from out Chicago was happening, right? And he's like, we just can't, we gotta try to understand it. And I remember I said it, I was like, fuck them, I ain't understanding that shit.
You know what I mean?
I mean, because I cannot, I don't entertain the bullshit.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And I grew up on that 60s, that 70s, you know, music. And when hip-hop came around, that's why I say I slapped it on the ass. This was for me. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Like, that was my parents' music. I loved it. I appreciated it. But this is for me. This is speaking to me. Right. Yeah. This is mine. So when I see anybody trying to bastardize it, I take exception to that. I take big exception to it.
You should. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just like these kids are on how we feel, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I was saying that with the AI thing, you know what I mean? Not to cut you off, I was saying that, like, there's no way that I want to hear anybody doing anybody else's style, anybody over anybody else's beat that they didn't do while they were alive. No, now, if you got some unreleased stuff that's in the vault, you know, Prince is supposed to have the biggest musical vault of any artist ever, right?
Yeah.
So I would like to hear some of Prince's music out of his vault, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't want to hear it bastardized over somebody else.
You don't want
to
hear tampered with.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
You don't
want to
tamper with the pure.
I get it. But because that's what it's about. This thing of ours, this culture of ours, and a lot of people forget or don't, in my opinion, don't give enough credit to the fact that hip-hop was the last greatest art form to be born.
Absolutely.
And since hip hop has come around, it has touched everybody across the globe. I was just watching something on social media a couple of days ago where these, I think they're called belly dancers. I don't want to mess them up, but over from India, they got on their, you know, belly dancer costumes and stuff, and they're actually breakdancing to hip hop. You know what I mean?
It's the most influential.
It's the most influential.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, nah, you know, and that's why I respect your take on it, because, like, if we had more people that were more protective of it, it wouldn't have got industrialized the way it has been. I keep a lot of things, I guess, because of how strong I do feel about them.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I'm always constantly working on myself to have the empathy for things, right? Mm-hmm. To always be able to be like, well, I see that side of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm one of those people that feel like I want to sit down and talk with a racist because I really just want to feel why. Mm-hmm. Like, what is your why? Everybody got a why.
True.
And I might not be able to see why, but what's your why? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then once you know, you never know what kind of enlightenment you might get off of like somebody else's why, even though you totally disagree with it. You know what I'm saying? So I say that to say, like, we need protected. I wish we had more protected people at the forefront of hip hop, because now we're in a place right now where you do have people that like come and take the culture. You have gentrifiers of hip hop. You have all of that, to where like it became about the money more than the art form, you know what I'm saying? And so now everybody feel like they can go get somebody, put some rhymes under them, and they a rapper. See? So, like, I deep down in my heart and soul, even if I'm not, like, you know, even if I'm able to accept the younger people's, like, expression, because that's what I call it, it's like, y'all don't have the same base to express the way we do. Like you said, right, 70s music, soul music, instruments, that was more prevalent in our upbringing. These kids, what's more prevalent in their upbringing is technology and synths and that stuff. They really don't, they might have never seen a band in their life or an instrument played in their life. And this is what they know, drill music. Super angry, super grungy, and that's their expression that they can connect with. I can't connect with that because I played a horn. I know what a saxophone sounds like. Right. That gets my frequencies going. So it's like, you know, I feel bad for them. More so than I hate what they're doing, I'm like, damn. Like I just said, I'm like, you'll never know the feeling of like a cassette tape, a warm. I'm glad vinyl's kind of making a reemergence, I feel like, in people's lives. Because like, that gives me hope that like, more people will go back to the foundation and mm-hmm. want to be closer to that real thing again. You know what I'm saying? But, like, yeah, it's an interesting time with all this technology and AI. It's,
no question.
Yeah.
No question. I go back to a conversation I was having with my nephew. Mm-hmm. I was playing Low End Theory in the car. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, who's that? He's like, what? Let's try. He's like, yeah. Who's that? Like, Tribe Called Quest. It hit me. Tribe Called Quest came out with, Low End Theory came out in 91, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My nephew was born in 2000.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so he's like, when did that come out? Like, asking me like it just came out.
Right.
It's like, well, this album is 30 years old, man. And now he's listening to that. He's listening right. to Gangstar. He's listening. Yeah. He loves Jazzmatazz and things of that nature.
Because that is real. Like, mm-hmm. it's that feeling's real when you get yeah. it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and then it hit me. Like what you were saying about your father, right? Mm-hmm. Introducing you to like soul music and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing to him.
Yeah.
That's his soul music. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
So it was definitely an interesting car ride. Yeah. You know, so he's starting to spread his wings a little bit.
It kind of speaks to like, you know, the interactions we have too, the passing down. Like you had more elders back in the day passing stuff down mm-hmm. to the younger generation. Mm-hmm. There was more of a connectivity there, whereas now because we like forced to work and be more out of the house and the schedules are really demanding. Right. There's not a lot of time to pass things down to the younger generation in that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I think that also has something to do with it. It's like kids listen to us, right? Because that we what they got. But we kind of have to like focus on other things than that. Mm-hmm. So it's like I think just the way we set up the passing down, the passing the torch rather, is different. Mm-hmm. Than how we got past the torch and past culture. You know what I'm saying? So I think if we just be more more aware of that, like, yo, we are the passers of the torch. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. My dad, for a while, I was made to listen to James Brown and Sam Cooke because he's like, this is what I'm playing. Mm-hmm. And you in my house.
Yeah.
Then eventually I was like, well, I like this. You know what I'm saying? This is yeah, groovy. I like yeah, this. You yeah, know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you know, yeah, it's definitely a lesson in that for sure. It's a gem in that, what you just said, for sure.
I'm going to say one more thing. My bad, John.
No.
Going back to Godfather. The reason I'm looking at your shirt is I want one. Number one.
Appreciate him, man. Yeah, he make them custom, so
I'll
figure it out.
Okay,
yeah.
Definitely. That's tight.
It's like 101 right now until somebody else get one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got you. But just dissecting that title and knowing what I know about you from talking to you mm-hmm. and from listening to the album, you know, I think it's safe to assume, and I'm just saying that because of the listeners that haven't heard it yet.
Yeah.
The title of your album has nothing to do with crime, right?
Nah. Yeah. It doesn't have nothing to do with the movie.
Yeah, it has everything to do with kind of what you were just saying about the responsibility that you put on yourself, right, and your children, and your godchildren, and things of that nature.
Yeah, so way before I was a father, I was a godfather, mm-hmm. and I thought I was going to be a godfather for life because I didn't have my kid until I was 30. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, you know, I'm about to be a rich uncle or a godfather for life. You know what I'm saying? Everybody going to make me the godfather of their kids. But just, you know, at the end of Blouses, when I say heart and mm-hmm. the baby say heart back, that's my first goddaughter. And my goddaughter was born after my mother passed. And the people, her parents, I knew for maybe like 2 years. Like, I didn't know them that long. There's people they knew way longer than me. But, like, they wanted me to be her godfather. You know what I'm saying? And I, like, took that to heart. I was just like, that's crazy. Y'all could have made anybody this big. You know what I'm saying? So, like, when she was born, we were at her christening. And I was like, you know, I was messed up. I came off of a night of partying. I looked bad. My skin was dark. You know what I'm saying? I just looked bad in this church. And so, like, the sermon was hitting me real hard that day, and I was holding her. And I was looking in her eyes before she was about to get baptized, and I was just like, yo, I got to stay alive. I got to get myself together. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I named it Godfather because of her. And also, the duality of that, because I always talk about that, is that in my scene in the DMV, and he'll tell you, I'm a godfather to my creative scene in the DMV. I help a lot of younger artists. I mentor a lot. I give a lot of opportunities. I connect a lot of bridges in my scene to people that are looking for a way to like further their creative endeavors. You know what I'm saying? Whether that's being an artist, whether that's being a camera, a photographer, videographer, if you want to be a curator of a show, like, I help a lot of people. So, like, if, you know, if some people claim themselves the king of the DMV or the king, cool, I'm the godfather of that. You know what I'm saying? I might not be directly related to the city in that way. Like, I'm not from D.C., but I've helped more people in D.C. than people from D.C. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Same way in, you know, Baltimore, Maryland, all of that. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's who I've always been. So that's what the title is growing into, because everything I feel like I do artistically is living and breathing. So what it started as, it might not continue to be as. At first, it was my goddaughter and my kid and all of that. But it's growing into more the name. Now people call me Godfather. Like, they be like, yo, Godfather in the building. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, and it's just the title of my art. You know what I'm saying? So it's definitely meaning more and more as the days go on. You know what I'm saying?
It sounds so let me ask you this. And I'm about to ask you a real tough question, because I know every album is probably special to you in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, if you had to pick, I'm going to ask you, it's a two-part question.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to pick your best album, what would that be? And if you had to pick an album that, I don't want to say is your worst, but an album like you would be like, yeah, you know what? I want to put that in. I don't want that as part of my discography any longer because of whatever reason. But if you can tell me what those two albums are, again, your favorite and then your least favorite. I know it's like kids.
You can't pick
your favorite child.
I definitely got an answer for that. Yeah. So my favorite album is Godfather. You know what I'm saying? Easy, like just, hands
just
down.
The
it's my diary. It's my testimony. It's everything. It's my growth. It's everything in the album. You know what I'm saying? My least favorite album is Nature Robinson, which is my second album. It has me on the cover as Nate Robinson, but I put my head on him dunking over a guy.
Yeah.
And that's my least favorite album, because like that was the album that was like not for me. It was like me trying to like make it for other people, and just this, my state of mind was just like I was just doing too many extracurricular activities.
I didn't
like myself.
I got you.
When I made that album, I had fun. You know what I'm saying? Like that album was like really fun, and I was happy because I was on stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, when Jimmy found his situation and he started making music off that, it got cool.
Yeah.
It sounded great, but I'm pretty sure he didn't like himself
in that process.
In that, because you're trying to, maintain off of the wrong things, you know? So, definitely Nature Robinson, my second music situation.
It's a great example.
Yeah.
Before I throw it to Scott, you sent me your favorite artist.
Mm-hmm.
And for everybody out there, his favorite artists are Jadakiss, Jay-Z, Westside Gunn, Kanye West, and Redman.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So you'll figure out, you know, as we go through this, I like putting people on the spot, man.
Okay.
I like people to feel uncomfortable a little bit. All right,
that's
because
fine.
To me, as my guy David Goggins, I don't know if you know who David Goggins is, but he always says, in order to be the best you could possibly be, you got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Okay? So I want you to give me one word that describes each of these artists. So Jadakiss, one word.
Fluid.
Fluid, okay. Jay-Z, one word.
Mogul.
Ooh, my gosh. Westside Gunn.
Curator.
Okay. Kanye West. Can't say crazy.
I was gonna say chaotic.
I like that word.
Mm-hmm.
That is very descriptive of him. And then last but not least, but Redman.
Homeboy.
Yeah. Got you.
I feel you on that. I'm from Jersey, so Redman.
Redman. I love Redman. My mother loved Redman.
Yeah.
My mother put me on the Redman.
Yeah, so. Reggie. So, you know, I could do this all day with you. You know what I mean? Because I've been listening to your album since John told me that, that you were booked for this. But I got a comment, too. That one track, Hard, right? That's one of my favorite.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite.
Yeah. I like how you're speaking to the sample.
Yeah.
It was great. Like, you have all the ingredients in tracks like that one. Like, the low pass, right, to bring out the bass line, the subtle use of the drums, the soulful loops. That's where I come, like, all right, this guy likes Mad Lib. You know, I can tell. I can tell. And I was telling you how I went to the website and I saw your picture with Mad Lib and Freddie Gibbs at the NPR Tiny Desk.
Yeah, that was a great experience.
Man, I told you. And John was right. I shouldn't have brought this up until the show. But I couldn't help it. I recognize that shirt that Freddie Gibbs got. Right? But I told you, my favorite part of that whole thing wasn't when they were performing. Because, you know, Mad Lib was just kind of just... He had the little shaker. He wasn't doing nothing.
He was just chilling.
Just actually, what I think was, when I look at his facial expression, he was enjoying. He was being celebrated.
Yeah,
and he was enjoying it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
he was enjoying
it. It was a great time, man.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And Freddie was enjoying celebrating his brother, right? Yeah. And then at the end, he just comes behind and hugs him, and you can hear him say, "I love you." You know.
Nah, it was, they really embraced each other at that joint. It was really like, you know, it was a celebration for both of them because, like, Freddie's in his, I want to say, his second or third win right now. You know what I'm saying? With his career. And just, like, it took the game to kind of come back to, like, a reappreciation for the type of hip-hop he does and lyricism he does. To get, like, you know, because it's one of them things, like, if you know, you know. But, like, I just think right now, because of people like Griselda and, you know, the Ransoms and the Freddie Gibbs and Alchemist, and just they're all celebrating, like, this third or fourth win of that type of hip-hop right now, where, like, the youngins is getting with it.
Right.
And the people who already appreciated that music from where it came from is like, okay, cool, we got some representation today in the forefront. So, like, it was a celebration all around. And then to have Robert Glasper there to bring that musical piece was just, like, it was...
That was dope.
It just musically, though, I just remember being like, yo, this is some of the best sounding music. Hearing it come from the sample to, like, a band playing it, just, it was incredible.
Right.
It was... And that's the only NPR joint I ever been to, like, you know what I'm saying?
That's the best one they ever did.
That's for real. That's like my favorite one
out
of them all. So, like, you know, it was great. And then I got to be there with my son. And then, you know, me and Freddie was talking. And he was just giving me props. Like, just, he was like, I could just tell you a good father. You just out here with your son cooling. Like, I'd be like, yeah, that's how I live. You know, like, my son, he'll tell you, my son come to everything. Like, he got... He known in all the venues from Howard to Songbird. Every, like, they seen my son go from a baby to a 5-year-old because I always got him with me, putting him in these situations, you know what I'm saying? So he actually, like, held my son for a minute and was like, man, it's making me miss my kids and stuff like that.
Right.
And then Mad Lib held my son, and Robert Glasper was like, they all was, like, cooling with my kid. Just, like, they was all just, you know, yeah, it was all uncles for that day, you know what I'm saying? And we connected in that way.
Great.
So it was a great experience. It just felt good to be there. It felt like I was supposed to be there.
I was going to say, I mean, those are your peers, man. Yeah. You were supposed to be there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They looked like, you know, that's where you were with your peers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So. Talk about great experiences. You know, I love how our show just follows a natural progression. You know what I'm saying? We don't have those scripts. You know what I mean? The best thing is
conversation.
We just vibe.
Yeah.
So talking about great experiences, I found out that you sold out the Fillmore and Howard Theater. How the hell did you do that? And tell me about that experience. Like, when did you recognize that you sold out either one of those events? Was it before you got on stage, or once you got on stage and you just saw people?
So, to keep it a buck with you, I didn't sell out Howard Theater by myself.
Okay.
I sold out the Howard Theater with GZA.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of...
Okay.
Not saying it's easier, but,
but
you had a little help, you know what I'm saying? I did have a event at Howard Theater recently with my platform Open Gym, and... Like I said, we started as an open mic. mm-hmm. with 50-person capacity. Mm-hmm. So to go from that to being able to have an event there, and we had Shay Noor was our headliner. She's from Buffalo, New York. Mm-hmm. She's carrying the torch for that hip-hop sound, mm-hmm. her and 38 Special and all of them.
Yeah.
That's a lot of the people I book. I book Stove God, Keisha Plum. I've had I just had 38 Special here, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, like,
that means we gotta get some invitations, right, Scott?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, now that I know y'all, yeah, and I know what y'all gotta, into, y'all definitely gotta, gonna be invited to the list. To these vibes, you know what I'm saying?
On the list.
But yeah, these are the people I love to like integrate in our scene.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fillmore situation was like a slow cook. When okay. we got there, I think it was like, I want to say it was like 600 tickets sold.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing this with all like independent artists. There was no headliners. There was no help. Mm-hmm. So by the time the end of the night came, we had done 1,200 tickets.
Jeez.
You know what I'm saying?
Doubled up.
And it just happened throughout the night. And we didn't have no big press. Mm-hmm. We didn't have no big articles. We literally did it all with like, you know, because he's an artist as well.
Okay.
We all just did it together, pulling people out. And getting them in this room, and like I'm a strong advocate for like independent artists, you know. Like
mm-hmm. I believe, can hear that. Yeah.
I believe a lot of people connect success or like talent with like the success, right? Mm-hmm. They connect the talent with the success or the profile.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of people. I was telling them even in the car, like they got 50,000 followers and all of that, but they can't bring 5 people out the house. You Jeez. Know what I'm saying? So like it's not relative to each mm-hmm. other, like, and I really know I have an eye for people who are quality but have a draw, because the draw means you have connectivity mm-hmm. with your fan base. If mm-hmm. people were to look at my social media, they don't know that I could fill up a venue that size,
right?
You know what I'm saying? Because I don't have 20,000 followers, 50,000, right. But I think I just got 7,000 followers, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? But 5,000 out of 7,000 are real people that I actually am connected to, have mm-hmm. met, have gotten from. I've never bought no followers, none of mm-hmm. that. I never went on no follow for follow
mm-hmm.
type of thing. Like, these are people I had connectivity to that follow me and are just waiting for that moment for me to blast off. They see the work. But, like, I have fans that, like, if tomorrow I was to get signed or whatever, that 7,000... it's going to be like another 7,000 that come out the woodworks that's watching from afar that don't have nothing to do with my internet profile.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, like, where I'm at right now as an artist is, like, I have a core fan base that's been around with me for a long time. I've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing this for real since 08.
You okay. know?
Like, I went solo in 16 with my album, but I was doing it 10 years before that, damn near. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? With groups and bands and being behind the scenes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's a lot of people that's kind of waiting for that next moment that everybody associates with success. They see me working. They see me, oh, I done opened for everybody you can name. People on that list, I done opened up for them all.
Mm-hmm.
I done opened for the Temptations before mm-hmm. in Oklahoma.
Nice.
I've opened for everybody that you can really name.
Mm-hmm.
Now people only know success for, like, tangibles.
I got you.
And certain things like that. So when they see the 550 outside, or they see the house, the big house on the hill, the court, once they start seeing those things, they'll come out the woods even more
mm-hmm.
to be like, yo, we stand behind Nature Boy and all that. And I had to understand that, because, you know, you mm-hmm. get your feelings sometimes. You're like, where the support? Why everybody?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
But, like, just kind of understanding, like, the whole thing, the whole picture is, like, these people don't know that me going on tour with a GZA is successful. You know what I'm saying? They like, how much did you make from that?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They don't know that I really, you know, I'm not making nothing crazy opening for GZA.
Mm-hmm.
But
the experience.
The one of the God MCs.
Mm-hmm.
No question.
Has, like, yo, gave me that opportunity. Like, yo, I bang with what you doing. You can come get some of my sold out crowd every time I do it. That's priceless.
Amen.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm really at that point now where I'm figuring out the business more, using the leverage that I have mm-hmm. as an influencer, stuff like that. Like, all of that's kind of coming into play now. And I had to go through all of that to get here, because I think my thing is to be independent. I think God wants me to be independent, wants me to have my own business. I had a record deal on the table in 2016 with the second song on my first album, the song And it blew up at the table. Son know this too, because Son gave me a shoebox of ones to make sure I got out Cali and I was straight. You know what I'm saying? And because I was going through my mother's stuff, like I didn't have a lot of this. I was going out there to sign anything from $250,000 to $500,000. You know what I'm saying? For a record deal, it blew up at the table with the paperwork. Like, if we sitting here ready to sign, the whole meeting blew up because the guy that was supposed to basically give me the money and sign me got into a fight with the guy that was representing me at the table.
Jeez.
So it blew up right there in my face, and then I was upset about it. I was
mad. Yeah,
somebody could have died. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was upset. In hindsight, though, if I would have got that money and that notoriety and all of that, I would kill myself. Just from having that much money and having that, like, I wasn't ready to receive.
In that phase in your life.
In that phase of my life, to get that right then and there, it would have been destructive. If I would have survived, I would be broker than I was. I wouldn't have gained anything, and I'd be trying to reach back to that again. As opposed to, like, knowing that I could do it and I have the ability to do it. I just got to get back there another way.
As they say, sometimes Yahweh blesses us by not opening the door.
And say it again, man. You know what I'm saying? That was really the situation with that.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. But I was very impressed to hear about those two achievements, as well as what you do with your open gym. And you mentioned that a couple times. But I want you to go a little deeper into, like, how that all came about and what is the goal of the open gym.
So, like I said, we started as an open mic. I have a lot of relationships as an artist. Like, when I do shows, I sell a lot of tickets. So I have those relationships with the people direct. So when I started Open Gym, I was telling this story in the car. There was a guy who used to come to some of the events we thrown just as a fan. But he also was doing booking at Ram's Head. Okay. So he was like, look, you know, I got Currency coming up. Let's see what y'all do with Currency. So he gave us like 200 tickets or so. We blew past him. You know what I'm saying? Sold 200 tickets. The Currency opened up. Then he gave us like a ASAP Ferg look at Baltimore Soundstage. So then he ended up getting a job at Live Nation DC as a junior talent buyer. And he was a guy that wanted to, like, make a difference, even though he wasn't a senior talent buyer. So he didn't have that much, like, power to do things as far as booking the talent, but he worked in the department. And he was like, you know, we was talking, he was like, what do you think I could do to, like, you know, make my mark? And I was like, well, no offense, but Live Nation is a huge monster that don't have any footprint in the micro world. Like, they're a big major corporate. They're the biggest live show production company in the world. But they don't have any type of reach to, like, local artists and stuff like that. I said, there has to be time between when the doors open and when the headliner goes on where you can put some openers on. And you can funnel them through Open Gym. So he kind of went back to them with that, and they was like, well, we might have some shows where that might make sense. A lot of times you got to figure it out with the tour manager, if that's, you know what I'm saying? But he was like, you know, they were like, well, we don't want to have to deal with none of that. You know what I'm saying? We don't want to have to, like, figure out if the artist is good enough. We don't want to have to, you know, just deal with any of that micro stuff. And they're going to have to sell tickets because we need accountability. We need them to add something to the show as well. So I said, okay, I'll handle all of that. You know what I'm saying? I'll come take out 100 to 200 consignment tickets under my name, meaning if they get lost or something like that, I'm responsible for that. You know what I'm saying?
You're vouching.
I'm vouching. I'm doing all the, you know, the EPKs, because a lot of artists that were on that level didn't know what an electronic press kit was. Mm-hmm. So I'm educating a whole just class of artists about the importance of your creative resume and stuff like that. I'm sending the resume back and forth to Live Nation. I'm eyeing these artists out at the open mic to make sure, like, okay, they talented, but they also got draw. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because they got to be able to sell between 50 to 150 tickets for them to, like, feel us. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So we did that with Open Gym Artists for about 2 years, and then pandemic came.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy that I was going through, he stopped working at Live Nation. So for a while, it stopped. But his boss, I made a mistake. I thought I was calling, like, Fillmore or something, and I called him, his cell phone, and I'm like, hey, you know who the, he's like, this is Nature. He's like, oh man, what's up? Like, he's just excited to talk to me. I didn't know who the hell he was. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He like, man, yeah, we're about to get things going again. You know, when we do, I'm like, you know, you did some good business with us, man. You made us a lot of money, you know, in those 2 years. And I'm just not thinking about none of that. Like, I'm thinking I still got to work and reach for them to even see me.
Yeah.
And they saw me, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So another year go by and nothing happened. But then he hit me up for a Larry June show. And he like, yo, you know, we got a DJ opening. So, like, what I'll do is, because I always want to maximize a moment, if they call me the DJ, I'll bring a DJ with me, but I'll host.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And I'll bring an artist or two with me. So we'll DJ like you asked us to for that hour, but we about to sneak a song or two in.
Of course.
And I'm about to get all this FaceTime and,
mm-hmm.
and social time with a sold-out crowd mm-hmm. on the mic. So I'm hosting the joint, getting them partying, whatever. I get two artists on from Open Gym to perform, do their best song. Now we just picked up all these followers and all this mm-hmm. notoriety, like, you know what I'm saying? So I just rinse and repeat with that. And now we have, like, a full partnership. So we doing a festival with them at Pier 6 in the summer with a Lucky Day and Money Long and stuff like that.
Oh, they basically want to go to that.
Yeah, so they definitely, like, been giving us more opportunity to work and partner since those, like, show and prove moments.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's just a thing of, like, showing your value, even if you think you up against a monster. You still, there's still some void you can fill.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And you just gotta be like, you know, and this is like my advice to anybody watching this. Like, you just gotta be willing to, like, put the work in,
mm-hmm.
show your work, and don't always look for something right away. You know what I'm saying? Like, try to get something for you in it yourself. Don't look for another person to, like, reward you with
mm-hmm.
the substance of the situation. You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
So, like, of course, I'm meeting people along the way. I'm building, like, now I know everybody in the venues,
mm-hmm.
from the security to the production manager to the sound guy to the light guy. Everybody knows who I am because they mm-hmm. done seen me walk in this building at least 40 times bringing artists in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's kind of how I got to build up without playing a song. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to build up my network and people by just being a person. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, the rest is history. Like, I work at Howard Theater.
Okay.
So they saw what we was doing with Live Nation. They was like, oh, we want that. You know what I'm saying? So that's how we got in Howard. And I only started working at Howard. I started working at the door just because I'm like, I'm not anybody working at the door. I'm Nature working at the door.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, they going to see all your concerts, people coming, Nature, what's up? Like, the, like,
yeah.
So I'm running the door more like a liaison than a front door check-in guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I'm managing that.
Sweet.
You know what I'm saying?
Sweet. You wanted to say something, Scott?
I did, actually. You know, going back to what you were saying before mm-hmm. about the tangibles, right?
Mm-hmm.
About how people measure success.
Yeah.
Right? And when you were saying that, I was thinking about one of your tracks, like the lyrics. So when John thinks I don't listen to the lyrics,
mm-hmm.
I do know.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Especially when the production's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You better have your production tight or else he's like,
you gotta set the dinner table, man.
It's one of my many faults. I admit that. But your track, the Red Corvette track, which is, I talked about it like 4 times already, mm-hmm. so you can tell it's one of my favorite tracks.
Yeah.
But on the hook, you said that big house on the hill. I want to know what that feels like.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like you're talking about more than just living in the house.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Now that I've got to really talk to you, I feel like you're talking about that.
Yeah, right? I'm talking about everything. You know what I'm saying? Because if I can if I can hold down a big house, then that means I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because your house represents, like, you own something. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And your house is, like, the thing you can put up against everything if it goes in trouble. Like, your house means so much when it comes mm-hmm. to ownership. You can have a car, as soon as you start driving it, it depreciates. It don't mm-hmm. matter if you own it or not. But your house is supposed to be more with time and, mm-hmm. you know, and all of that. So, like, yeah, that represents more than just having a big house. That's like the money's in the bank and the kids are straight. You know what I'm saying?
That's a deep track. I really like that one.
That's the track everybody, like, you know, I just did Chicago and nobody knew me from anything. And mm-hmm. they were there for RZA and three artists went on before me. And sometimes that's trouble because they could dry them out before mm-hmm. you even get on. Mm-hmm. So I like to go first a lot. You know, a lot of artists want to go closer to the headliner. Mm-hmm. I like going first. I want them as soon as they come in there. They still open to something new. Mm-hmm. After you have three artists come on and do 25-minute sets of shit they don't know, and most artists don't have that connective, like, that I see. Like, I'm big on, like, I'm going to talk to people. There are people out there like I am. So before I play a song and try to get them to like anything, I'm going to get them to like me. I'm going to crack a joke. I'm gonna kill the elephant in the room. Y'all here to see GZA, right? Y'all don't care about me, right?
Smart.
But look, I'm only going on for this long, and I got the self-produced album of the year. Can I play some of that for y'all? Got them. Right there. Now mm-hmm. they like, so now all I gotta do is be good. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
The easy part.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, but I usually, you know, I break the ice. You know what I'm saying? And I break the ice the whole thing. I've done the whole album in front of people who had no idea. DC, I did Godfather front to back. I just switched the order mm-hmm. to do more of a storytelling vibe.
Yeah.
But like, by the time I did Red Corvette and Cold Summer, like, I had people in there crying.
Jeez.
You know what I'm saying? Like, which was crazy for me, because, like, I knew those songs were deep. I didn't know it was going to get that deep for people where they start thinking about people they lost.
Everybody got a story, man.
Everybody got story, that. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Everybody got the story of loss.
Yeah.
So, like, Red Corvette and Cold Summer, like I said, like, people was talking to me with tears in their eyes. Everybody DMs me, like, yo, this song, I really connected. I lost my mother. I lost my daughter. I lost this. I lost that. And I'm like, you know, like, damn. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's...
It takes a lot of courage to talk about that.
Yeah. It does. It does. You know
I think
I mean?
Especially as a black man, too. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people have, like, also complimented me on, like, being a vulnerable black man with my feelings, and it ain't angry.
Yeah.
Right.
Because everybody, they think if we're going to show any emotion, it's going to be anger and aggression. So to, like, tell, you know, even me talking about my son and my baby mom and stuff like that, like, people connected to that because they was like, you know, everybody got the story of a man ain't shit and a father ain't this and a father ain't that. Nobody really gets to get the story of, like, a man who wants to be in their kid's life, but there's turmoil between the mom and the dad.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so it was a lot of things I got to touch on that album that was like, you know, that like I said, it was therapeutic for me.
I got you.
I heard it. Yeah. I heard it. Ironically, you know, not ironically, but truthfully, you know, one of the reasons why that song Red Corvette stuck with me, my mom's also passed away from breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So I felt what you were saying about there was a release.
Yeah.
You know, like you
almost feel guilty about it.
I did.
You're like, man, I'm not supposed to be happy that I'm free like this, but, like, you know, and it's not like nobody made me take care of my mom. My mom had a husband.
Mm-hmm.
But when she got sick, he just broke down. He wasn't built for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? He wasn't built to see his wife like that. So I took care of both of them.
Because mm-hmm.
mentally, he checked out.
Right.
So I was going to go get everything for the house. I carried my mother in the car because her leg stopped working, all type of stuff with her spine. So I'm carrying her from the house to the car, the physical therapy. I'm cooking, I'm cleaning, I'm doing all of that. But I said she even helped me then, because to go from that to being a father was effortless.
Because
I had to put somebody before myself. So it was effortless. Like, nothing.
You had your boot camp.
I had my boot camp. You know what I'm saying? And I would do all that again.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I would do all of that over just to be able to be with her.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But at the time, it was hard.
True.
I'm in my mid-20s. everybody having fun and traveling. And, this is why I got to thank God. I still had gigs and stuff like that. I was with this production company called Starlight Orchestra where I was traveling every weekend to do, like, corporate events and weddings of celebrities and stuff like that. I was doing covers. So I would come perform Biggie and Pitbull and Flo Rida and all of that at somebody's wedding.
Right.
Get paid a good check. Travel. Get treated like an artist. Get a hotel. All of that. And then, it was back to life after the gig.
You say the rider was nice.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
the contract added in there.
So, like, I thank God, man, because, like, even when things was dark, like, God carried me with certain things, kept me in the game somehow. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, personally, if my artistry wasn't doing what it needed to do, stuff like that came around where I could still be creative, still travel. Like, I only travel because of music. I've been to 40-plus different states off of music only. I've never really vacationed or just went somewhere to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. I've had to do a gig, and then we got time to hang out. You know what I'm saying? So I've seen so many places. I went overseas because of music. Mm-hmm. I never would have been to Europe if it wasn't for music. You know what I'm saying? So, I give all the thanks to God in that journey. You know what I'm saying?
So before we get out of here, first of all, I just definitely want to thank you for stopping through the Light Podcast here at Anchor Media Studios down here in Laurel. I definitely appreciate that. Shout out to our videographer. I know his name is not him, but I know he has a name. Why don't you drop his name for
him? My man, Loso Baby. Drive him crazy. You know what I'm saying? Loso. Yeah.
All right. And Scott, what you got before we get out of here?
I just really want to say thank you for coming through.
This
exceeded my expectations. You know, like I said, I feel like I know you from your album. I feel like I know you more now. And I'll definitely be checking for you, your events and things of that nature. I know John joked a little bit about including us. Please, I mean that sincerely.
I'm gonna let y'all know.
Yeah, we locked t-shirts off from the stage.
We locked in, man.
Okay. Yes,
we locked in for real.
Hey, y'all heard him. Yeah. Y'all heard him.
Son, he said we're locked brother, in, man.
So let's go.
That's my heart, man. That's my brother. That's, son, I grew up in the barbershops as a shop boy. You know what I'm saying? So, like, son seen me as a kid, and I used to play my beats in his car, and he's like, that's all right. You know what I'm saying? Like, he really seen me through my journey. Yeah. So, like, anybody that I connect through with him, I already know what time it is. Mm-hmm. He don't connect me with just anybody, and he ain't connected to just anybody. So, I already knew what the vibes was.
For and just so everybody knows who he's talking about, Son Cisse, CEO, owner of Legends Barber Co. He was on the Light Podcast. And he connected us with nature. So shout out to you, Son. We definitely appreciate the connection. What do you want the people to know? What do you have coming up? What's going on, let's say, in the next 90 days for you? You can let the people know what's going on.
So I'm going to continue to be on tour with GZA, doing some more dates with GZA. He's doing his
anniversary. What's he about, an extra large? I'm going to get you a t-shirt for him.
I can't call it. I ain't
gonna. Right, so now,
I would say an extra large before anything else. But I'm also gonna be going to Europe with AZ in June.
Okay.
To do that. More open gym events, coming up. I do this thing called Fresh Produce too. Mm-hmm. It's like a producer's lounge where producers come out, play their beats.
Yeah, you have one of those coming up.
On Wednesday.
On Wednesday. And that's at where again?
It's at Birdland Records, so it's in a vinyl store.
Okay, and where's Birdland Records located?
DC.
It's in DC?
Union Market.
Yep. Okay, so everybody check out Birdland Records this upcoming Wednesday for the producers for Fresh Produce, to check out some up-and-coming producers.
Yep.
And, we want to extend, like you extended us an invitation to come out to your events. We want to extend an invitation not only to you, but also to any of your artists that you think will benefit from a platform such as the Light Podcast here at Anchor Media Studios here in Laurel. We want to extend that to you as well. Bring through however many artists you want. Let us know who you want to highlight, and we'll definitely get them on the podcast. We can, you see the way the setup is here. We can do a nice photo shoot with them and things of that nature. Yeah. We can even do a video here. You know what I'm saying? We can shoot your next video here.
Okay.
Let's do that. Let's do that.
There's plenty of songs on the album.
So we would love to be able to, be a part of everything that you have going on moving forward to some aspect.
Absolutely.
So just, plug us up and just let us know how we can be beneficial to you.
Appreciate that, man. Appreciate y'all. It's good to just talk.
No doubt.
And just talk from the heart, man. You know what I'm saying? We recording and stuff, but that don't even matter. It's just...
I forgot him was sitting there. That's your nickname from now on. You know that.
Hey, that's him.
That's him.
He's him.
You need to get that t-shirt on him. You know what I'm saying? That's actually a good t-shirt line. That's actually a good, y'all heard it here first, though. You know what I mean? I want to get my Connection Clothing and have them do up some I'm Him t-shirts.
Yeah.
And get those with the Light Podcast logo on the back. And we're going to have that pumping out there to y'all pretty soon. But Scott, do what you do, man. Take us out.
We've got a last thing, your social media.
My social media is Nature Boy Music. That's Nature, spelled correctly, B-O-I, because we got to have something a little literate and ignorant in there, B-O-I Music. The website is natureboymusic.com. Everything is pretty much Nature Boy Music, Nature Boy on all platforms. Self-produced album in the year right now, you know what I'm saying? Got to follow.
Nice. Check that out. And there you go. You heard it here, Light Podcast, Nature Boy. We out.